My hands are shaking. Welcome to Sounds of the Bazaar Live. Live internet radio, live from Online Educa Berlin. Online Educa is, I think, the world's biggest e-learning conference. And there's some 2,000 delegates here from 99 countries live in a intercontinental hotel in Berlin. We're having a wonderful time live at the conference. But if you can't be here, Sounds of the Bazaar is going to be bringing you the best sounds of the conference. We're going to be talking to many of the delegates, talking about their projects, talking about their hopes for the future, talking about the crisis, because you can't avoid that. And we've got about a 45-minute show for you today and some wonderful guests coming onto the programme. But now I'm going to hand over to Jenny Hughes, who's going to be talking to Peter Isaacs, I think, about the origins of Online Educa, where it all started. Over to you, Jen.
Peter, really nice to have you along to the programme. One of the things I'd love to talk to you about is how Educa started all those years ago. I think it was 1995. We're setting the scene for this first guest on our first programme of this conference by looking at the past. So, Peter, how are you involved and how did it all get together?
It was marvellous and actually an eye-opener for me. To work with a team of people who had really been looking to the future and understood a lot of things that we didn't understand at the time. The basic reasoning behind choosing Berlin was that in 5 years earlier, the Berlin Wall had fallen. It wasn't just the Berlin Wall, the whole of the Soviet Empire was falling apart, and we didn't know exactly how it was going to be restructured. We didn't know how Europe was going to evolve, but we did know that there was an enormous effort to be made with Eastern Europe, because the level of professional skills, competence and knowledge wasn't quite the same thing. Everyone knew that as the West, and they had a big effort to do. So Berlin was chosen because it was seen as the place, a part of Eastern Europe, really, which was the place where symbolically the unification of Europe, of Germany, on the one hand, and Europe could actually take place. And education was a vital part of it, obviously, bringing people up to the same level of professional skills and education itself. What was also prophetic about that was it was called Online Educa. Well, there weren't many people online in 1995. In fact, the idea of being online didn't really have a lot of meaning for anyone. The World Wide Web had just been created. The term e-learning didn't exist yet, so I don't know what the reasoning was, who it was in the team that was led by Karl Bader, Rebecca Strohmeyer's father. I don't know who made the decision to call it online, but it was prophetic.
It was fortuitous
and prophetic. We are now living in an online world. Nobody is not online. At the time, nobody was. I'm based in France, where we thought we were online because we had the Minitel.
I remember Minitel very well.
No. So what was very interesting, anecdotally, is that the first Online Educa, which took place in Berlin, took place symbolically in East Berlin at Alexanderplatz, in a horrible Soviet-style building called the Kongresshalle, which wasn't properly heated, had insufficient electricity in some of the, we couldn't even show our PowerPoints in some of the rooms, and people were very unhappy. We had lunch was typically different to what it is today here at the Intercontinent.
What did you have for lunch then?
Well, we were generously served one stale roll with a slab of ham or cheese in the middle, and either an apple or a banana for the sweet, and that was it. So, and that was served inside the Congress Hall in a central room, which was also poorly heated. So it wasn't a model of comfort it wasn't very futuristic. It was the Soviet past we were seeing. And I think that's what decided the team. I wasn't part of that decision. In fact, it took me by surprise. The following year, I was told, we're expecting you at the Intercontinental in West Berlin. And so we moved from Soviet communism to Western luxury and the best of the capitalist world. So, and it's been here ever since, and it's been a marvelous experience, growing all the time.
Just one last question to you, because we've got a whole queue of people lined up here, but I've been taking quite an interest recently in the joint laboratory that's being built in the Middle East between Iran, Palestine and Israel, bringing together scientists to use a common facility, a common research facility. This is the same model. This is using science and research to promote peace.
Well, it's something I certainly believe in. If we go back to the initial reasoning about online educa, it was about unifying Europe. We're still working on that. Europe is now 27 countries and 28 in 2013 with the arrival of Croatia. Europe was all about peace. Building Europe was about peace. Unifying the East and the West was about peace. And we desperately need peace in the Middle East. We desperately need it. So anything we can do that, if the model we've been using here is in any way helpful, obviously that would be a fantastic step forward for humanity.
Peter, lovely to talk to you. One of our oldest members of EDUCA, and I think we're going to go to EDUCA present. Thank you very much indeed.
Okay. We are going to the present, I suppose, because I'm going to be talking to Carsten Wolf about video and things like that. Shall we sit down? Welcome to a rather ad hoc lounge in our studio here. It's definitely an outside broadcast studio we're using here in Online EDUCA. Welcome, Carsten, onto the programme. I've talked to you before about Draft Hub, but it's quite a long time ago, and it's going to be nice to find out. So what you're trying to do, and you told me just before we came on, you're trying to turn this very strange German word to mean something in English. Tell me about that.
All right, so our platform is about people who know something, they do something very well. We like to explain it to others and help others to become experts themselves. So in Germany, there's a word for this in German. It's called Draufhaber, to do something extremely well. And so what we try to do is to make this Draufhaber word an English word, like kindergarten, for example. So that's our goal.
I think that's probably the biggest challenge I've heard at this conference so far, if you can get the English to adapt that word. But tell me more. We got plenty of videos on YouTube about people doing things. What makes your platform different?
Yeah. So actually, our platform really focus on people who can do something very well and explain it to each other. And we have integrated other stuff from social bookmarking, so people really can try to really geek out in their interest. So like Mimi Ito, she did this really big study on messing around, geeking out about interest-driven learning. So what we are doing is that we are implementing the platform for write this idea, so the people really can get into their interest and just focus on it. If you go to YouTube, we ask a few hundred students, what are you watching on YouTube? So most of it, they listen to music, we see fails of other people, and then we also look at some stuff to learn. So we want to take focus on learning and just have people focus on learning on our platform and create a really supportive environment for them. So like it's like Vimeo for educational videos. And also we try to bring together informal learning and formal learning. So what we do is that we offer schools and universities some like closed parts of it. So you can work with your students and they upload their videos, but we're no haters just bashing you all the time. And then you as a teacher can decide together with your students which of these videos are good enough to show them to a broader public.
And that's quite an interesting question. How do you decide what's good with video? We got loads of video content. I mean, we've got the probably the most ever watched video on YouTube. It's probably not the technically most brilliant piece of work, yeah. 800 million views. I can't pronounce it, the Korean video. But how do you decide what's good?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question, because if you ask people from TV, they have a very commercial view of it, and they are thinking about how many people are watching this, and it has to be interesting all the time, and has some special style. On the internet, that's different. If you look at the 10 most viewed videos on YouTube, it's nothing you see on TV, right? So what we are doing now is to develop a feeling what is a good user-generated explanation video. So what we are doing is we don't believe that that's the stuff you see on normal instructional TV. So we are really now researching if there are some new ways to explain something which is different than what we teachers do. And so that's all about user-generated content, and to see if they come up with ideas to present some stuff which is much more accessible to their peers. And that's a big experiment, but we want to build this platform with this.
And your hypothesis, I understand you're doing that research, yeah? So you haven't got the results yet, but what's your hypothesis? What do you think you're going to find out?
I think it will be a really different mix of different styles, because, I mean, students, or all of us, we are like socialized by 10,000s of hours in school with some normal teachers, so there's some we expect something of an instructional video, right? So that's one style, that's what teachers do. The second one would be, we are all experts in watching TV, and there are a lot of science shows and all that. So there's also this, like, in Germany we have this TV show with a mouse. It's for people of all ages, and they explain stuff. So that's another style. And I think we will see some pretty new, different stuff, which is not very much professional. You know, I did a seminar yesterday with some teachers, and we had 1 hour to produce explanation video. Just to come up with an idea and make a video and present it. And the thing is, often these ad prompt to more improvised stuff has a much more... there's much more heart in it, and it's sometimes much more on the point to explain something, and it's so that's great.
And you said at the beginning you've got an ambition to make this in English words, so this means you're trying to spread this platform out. So we're going to go, but if people are listening to this, like me, because I've just got an idea how I might be able to use this, and I'm going to be coming and talking to you, I've got the luxury of being of more accessibility. But say someone isn't living in Germany and they're interested in this, how can they find out more?
Yes. Actually, you can go to the website. It's draufhaber.tv. So I think we have to spell it out in the podcast description right now.
We'll put up on the links to go with this program. Nice. We'll put the address.
Yeah. So right now we're in private beta, but in December we go into the open beta, and right now we're also preparing the internationalization of this thing. So the first language will be English. What a surprise. But actually we plan to do more languages, so that really to support people from other countries, but also people within a country who have another mother tongue and try to get into this new language. So, and we just did a project here in Berlin with a multi-language classroom, and there were students from 15 nations and 11 languages in one class. Wow. And what they did was that they interviewed their parents, their uncles, their grandmas, to explain them some ability we have to do some bread or to sew something, and then we translated it back from the mother tongue to German or from one language to the other. And so they train the languages and really build upon their cultural capital of being fluent between different language cultures.
No, and I guess that's going to be one of the themes of the program. Thank you very much, Carsten. We're very much going to continue in that intergenerational and intercultural theme. In a moment, my colleague Jenny, I think, is going to be talking to people from Namibia. And they created a massive stir at the conference yesterday. But first of all, I'm handing back to Dirk, who's, as always, sitting behind the deck, quietly controlling our sound levels here, producing the programme. And he's going to be playing us a short burst of some great music. Sounds of the Bazaar.
I'm just meeting Maggie Bikis-Amos and Umbi Umbi.
Yes.
Did I get that right?
Excellent. Great pronunciation.
I'm going to have to come and live in Namibia. It's just a gift. And Maggie's just been standing here complaining that she's tired and she's got no energy. And she's actually been bopping along to Dirk's music. So I really don't believe this. Okay, Maggie, one of the reasons we've asked you to come along is because you're actually part of the organising team for next year's Africa Online. Online Africa? Africa Online?
E-learning Africa.
Nearly right. So tell us about that. Tell us what's involved in organising it.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm currently the chairperson of the local organising committee, and that's a lot involved in planning such a conference. I mean, it's all about logistics, it's all about transport, it's all about money, it's all about getting people there, getting them, you know, custom cleared. It's all about setting the program, it's about setting the theme for it, it's about making it appetizing for people. So yeah, there's a whole lot involved in organizing such a conference. But hang on, we share this, it's a shared activity. So because it is a shared activity, we actually don't have to feel it necessarily on one person, because we spread it and everybody can assist and fulfill a particular role. And that's exactly what we are doing at the moment in Namibia. We work together as a team, several subgroups together with a higher ministerial level group, ministers, PSs, and we have, of course, good assistance from the ICWE team here in Berlin.
And what's your role in this?
My role, I'm from Namibian Broadcasting Corporation, and
so why aren't you doing this? Why am I doing this? You should be holding this microphone.
No, because I think you are better at it. And I was saying, I'm actually a backbencher for my chairperson here. So I'm from NBC, and we will also contribute our side. By my role will be mostly also to help with the marketing and the public relations. That's where my specialty comes in. And I'm looking forward because I think it's going to be great. Because now that I'm here, it's even giving me that oomph. I can't wait for us even to make it a success. And like our PS said yesterday, we have to be so successful that even when other people come and ask us, we don't give them all the ingredients how to be successful because we still want to be a top. And I think with Dr. Amos here, it's going to be great because she is wonderful. She's also my boss there in Namibia.
Yes. Oh, hear about it being the best e-learning Africa ever. We will try our utmost to bring all the ingredients together to make it a success, but we will not share everything.
And we have a great team.
So what do you think are the ingredients, the vital ingredients?
Well, we've just said we're not going to let them out.
No,
it's team spirit. It's team spirit. It's doing it from the heart. It's bringing that passion out. It's trying to convince, you know, people that we need this. Because why do we need this? It's because we need to start to innovate. We need to change what we are busy doing at the moment. We cannot go in a static direction. We need dynamism. We need frequent changing things that can assist us in doing things even better. You know, maybe we are complacent because we think that we are doing it well already, but we can do it maybe different, you know, and reach even more and more and more of our rural areas so that we can become one, increase, you know, make a difference in our high unemployment rate, you know, bring the youngsters on board, let them be assured that they mean something, that they are valuable as well. So we need to go to all corners and all walks of life to make a difference.
Yes, I also wanted to add to that. All that I want to say is that I seriously think about 2015 when we look at the Millennium Development Goals. We really want to eradicate extreme poverty in our country. And we are only a population of 2 million. And I think with this, in any which way we go, we will be able to really, really help our people. We can do it because we are only 2 million. What is so difficult? And I think this will assist us in so many ways. The other day, I was talking to someone who was talking about the e-health, where a person who's in Namibia can be assisted by a doctor in South Africa who can diagnose the person without traveling, without going there, just by using the e-health system. So I think this is also one way, really, to leapfrog our way to realizing the Millennium Goals, of, especially to eradicate poverty. Really, we don't need to be poor in our country, especially with people like Dr. Maggie. No, I don't think so, colleagues. I don't think so.
So what's going to make e-learning Africa different from, say, Edgar Online?
Oh,
what's special about it?
Like my colleague said here, she said it all. I mean, we have it. It is to invite all of you all over the world to come to Namibia. We have it. There's a lot of things hidden that we don't expose, you know, to the world. But you need to come there to be able to understand what it is. We've got rich resources. There is no need for us to actually be poor and to be struggling. But we need to open and share and get that right mindset. And there's a lot of beautiful, unique things in Namibia that you can't find anywhere else in the world. That's besides the weather being great.
Yes. I was just to say, one of the things that hopefully will be
warm,
different.
Warm, friendly hospitality. I mean, the list
and no
is
rain.
Endless.
A lot of sunshine. The sun is shining in that country. You won't believe it. After maybe Arizona, we are the number one when it comes to sunshine. We don't know how to do with our sunshine. It's too much, colleagues. Yes.
And a smile. A warm smile. We always are warm-blooded.
Are you sure you're advertising a conference?
We're always smiling.
That's the unique subtleties, you know, of Namibia and the people in Namibia. We know how to welcome people and let them feel at home. I'm sure some people would struggle to come back after that exposure.
Especially the Germans, because we have so many old German towns there. Yes. They will enjoy it, especially Swakopmund. Swakopmund is our little German town. It's so beautiful. It's our coastal resort where we always go on holiday. We are even going this holiday again there. It's beautiful, and I don't know, if it wasn't for the Germans, I think the town wouldn't even exist, ne?
I mean, I have to ask Graham now whether he's going to pay for me to go to Online Africa next year. I mean, come on, we really have to.
Next year, you need to pay people, you need to sponsor, you need to motivate. There's
Graham, you're listening to this, you have to listen to this. Yeah. Tell him again.
You need to sponsor people, you need to bring the masses. We need a critical mass of people interested in this, and we can assure you, we'll definitely satisfy the need, whatever it is.
And people usually say that we are a little Europe over there. So you can get the best of all the worlds.
As long as we get the weather, we're really happy.
I mean, the weather, you were lovely.
Now, but it was great having you.
We love
it. Come back tomorrow. We like the chat. That's absolutely wonderful.
Thank you.
Bye.
We shouldn't let this not be mentioned to the world. We're a country, we're a front runner in ICT policy development and implementation.
Boring.
But of course, we need to make sure that we get better and better and better at it. Because don't forget that the theme is innovation, change and tradition.
So another thing about Namibia that stands out is that we are, in Africa, we are the number one. We were rated by the Reporters Without Borders as the freest country, the best, number one, top spot. It's a democratic country where everyone can express their views. So you can come and just talk any haha that you want to talk. You
are allowed. Grace is going to shout at me because this is turning into a soap opera, not an interview. I'm going to come over later. If you've got more beer, I'll definitely be there.
Yes. Please, yeah. Let's advertise it again. You can come to our stand and you can at 5 o'clock this afternoon, 5:30 in particular, we have Windhoek Lager through the happy hour.
Reinheitsgebot. You know the Reinheitsgebot is the purest beer, no preservatives. You can drink as much as you want, you won't get drunk. It's only me who get drunk.
Thank you very much. Graham, put your mic on immediately, otherwise we'll start again.
Okay, thank you, Jen, and thank you to having you on the show. I'm not sure how Gabriel Rizzola will going to beat the offer of beer tonight. Okay, Gabriel, tell us about your project you're working on. You're working on intergenerational learning and technology, and it's kind of interesting because we are always talking about digital natives and elder people who don't know a thing about what's going on. So have you started to bridge this gap?
Yes. I'm not sure if I will be so passionate as my previous speaker who are, but I will try to be at their level. So, yes, indeed, we have been running an initiative which is ending next month. It's a 2 years long project, which is focused on the digital capital of, as you call them, digital natives. And let's say, helping them play a role in which they, through a volunteering process, train elder people to become digital literate. And in return, then a group of seniors are selected and prepared to become mentors of the youth people to, let's say, help them better facing the challenges of adult life, especially, let's say, how to look for a job or how to present themselves when doing so. So it's it has, let's say, a focus on employability because youth people are suffering a lot, the lack of opportunities in this context of crisis. And on the other side, it's trying to help senior people to become more integrated into the digital society, let's say.
So the project is a reaction on the financial crisis?
So the project was born indeed 3 years ago as an idea when we were already, let's say, living this crisis time, and it was contextualized to it. The project is called eScouts. It's about intergenerational learning, and it tries to, let's say, put all together in a two-side cycle in which one group teach the other, and then the other mentors the first one. So it's we felt when we were designing the project that this was something that was not really reached yet in another good projects running, because there are good initiatives in which senior people is training other senior people in digital competencies, and this is fine because it's easier for senior people to accept that others like them teach them. But there were also good initiatives of young people volunteering in telecenters to teach adults. But now we, let's say, put all together, and we are running this program which touches telecenters, public libraries, social centers where digital or, let's say, internet access is available. So it's a wide range of what we call blended learning spaces, in which the role of facilitators in touch with the public there is critical, because this is another part of the project. We have been preparing those facilitators to become developers of intergenerational learning. So those facilitators are the people who first train the young people, and then in a second round train the elder people to become mentors of the young.
So what does the elder people, what do the elder people get from the project? What digital competences do they achieve, and what are the effects? Do you have? Can you have you already monitored some effects on the use on their employability?
Okay, so on the side of senior people, what the training is very practical and is oriented to their interest, let's say. So the most demanding issues were learn to operate, to use the computer, because there were lots of them who didn't know how to use a mouse, for example. Then how to communicate with others, using Skype, for example, to communicate with their grandsons. Also editing pictures, creating albums, you know, to share experiences about travels or about their memories, because there were nice experience, collective experience in which they tried to, let's say, document the memories from the past. And on the side of the young people, they were mentored, as I was saying, by the elder people, let's say, in a process to acquire more self-esteem and be better prepared and valorize their competencies, because they have lots of competencies, but they don't know that they have those competencies, or they are not conscious about. So it was more a process of empowering them. And both experience for youth people teaching the adults and then receiving that kind of mentoring were very helpful to make them more confident about their chances. So it was more increasing their employability.
And how do you select the young people? Because, I mean, it's easy to... There's a prejudice going on that young people can do anything with a computer, but when you get actually to work with young people, they really need some teaching as well. No, not every young people in the world can edit a photo or does know how to produce a video, a little video. How do you select these young people, or have you trained them as well in digital comp?
No, we didn't train them in digital competencies, but more on how to teach about. And the selection process indeed took place through these public internet access points where they were already in contact somehow. Or these are grassroots organizations which are well rooted in their territory, so they have access to young people. And we made a research phase at the beginning of the project where we learned that those young persons which were who were candidating themselves to participate in the project have a high educational level. So this was, let's say that this make easier in a sense the selection process because we have a good quality material to work with. And the kind of training they received was more about, for example, adult psychology, or how let's say, to motivate groups of elder people, how to lead them to common goals, etc., through a digital path, let's say, no, towards what they were aiming to conquer.
Thank you, Gabriel. A very interesting and neat approach. And back to you, Dirk.
And you're listening to Sounds of the Bazaar, and it's a hectic program this morning. We were worried we wouldn't have enough people to interview, and people have just kept on coming, and some really great stuff. And Eileen's working hard today. She's going to be the next up, and it's been a real pleasure to have an old friend of mine, Pablo Franzini, who is working with me on the Layers project. And I thought that would be a bit too incestuous for me to do the interview. So we got Eileen, who knows something about the Layers project, but not so much as me. And perhaps I'll ask as soft questions as I throw to Pablo about it. Over to you, Eileen.
Hello, Pablo. First, I think since the Learning Layer project has already started, are you working since two months?
Actually, it's not even a month that we started. We started on the 1st of November, and we had the kickoff 7 days after the start. So, yeah, it's been like 3 weeks.
Okay, so I'm not going to ask you about results of your project, but just sketch the idea and the concept of the project of Learning Layers.
Yeah, Learning Layers aims primarily at enabling individuals working in small and medium-sized enterprises to access and to share knowledge with other SMEs, with other individuals working in small and medium enterprises, even if they are competing in the same market. So why is this important? Because, you know, big organizations normally have access to many resources. You know, they have many experts inside, they have a lot of people with experience. When we are talking about an SME that just have like five people, when they encounter a problem, they can Google it or ask somebody they know. So imagine if you Google it, but not just and call somebody you know, but also when you search on the internet, you get something that tells you, oh, this guy, you know, John Cook, that works in this SME that is inside your clusters of SME, inside your group, also knows about this. And he has wrote two papers or he has commented on a forum about this topic. So this solution will actually enable people in the SMEs to access knowledge from other SMEs that they will not be able to access, and break the barrier between the advantages that big organizations have compared to the small organizations that don't have access to this kind of resources.
What does the companies think about your approach? Because it's mainly the company who wants to save the knowledge inside and keep the knowledge inside. So how do they deal with your approach of sharing the knowledge between individuals beside company boundaries?
Yeah, the main thing about layers is that we have to create the layers that will actually provide with the confidence and the incentive to share, because companies love the idea of accessing somewhere else information, but they do not like the idea of actually share their information, share their knowledge. So we have to mimic what social networks do right now and create incentive mimicking those infrastructures. Like, for example, in Facebook, many people share things in Facebook that before, like 10 years ago, they would actually have paid for it. Now you can find seminars online, you can find training online that 10 years ago they were paid for. Why? Because there is an incentive, a social incentive. We want to create those structures. We don't exactly have that defined, and the model has to be built. And the first step to do that is actually to go to the users and talk to them and find out sociologically, psychologically, and economically how they share and why they share. And after that, we can actually build the models to construct those layers that are basically technology and processes that will motivate people to share and, of course, to access. I don't think anybody has a problem to access all this information, but yeah, the sharing is a problem that we have to solve.
And how do you access the tacit knowledge in the workplace? Because it's this one that is most important for working and in web, but it's let's able to share through internet. It's not written down, it's not in a kind of archived way. So how do you deal with the problem of the tacit knowledge sharing, or are you keeping for the explicit knowledge?
No, we have to. There are ways that where technology can actually reflect how people share knowledge informally and not tacitly. Like, for example, some people go out and have a coffee and actually share knowledge there that can be very valuable, but they will not reflect it anywhere else. They will not reflect it in a paper or in a web page, exactly, etc. But sometimes if they find somebody they trust that is talking about a topic, they made a comment. And those comments mimic, not precisely, not perfectly, but they can mimic how people share in informal contexts. So if you actually create the right context and the needed trust for people to share, because people will not share if they don't trust the people that are listening, so you need to have a critical mass of trusted people to share. If you get that context, people will share informal knowledge that, and will transform it into more formal knowledge via comments, etc. So it's like what we're doing right now. We're actually transforming some informal knowledge that could be anecdotes into this, and is recorded in video and audio, so we could do that. Yeah.
And do you want to change the whole economy, or are you focusing currently on sectors, on specific branches?
Well, think about how many SMEs are there. In these days, I found a report from the European Commission that says that 99.something% of companies are small and medium-sized enterprises. So basically, SMEs move the economy. So do we want to change the economy? Of course we want to, because we want to help SMEs. And we actually create an infrastructure that changes the way that people share informal knowledge and convert informal into formal knowledge that can actually be accessed by others. We are helping them. We are putting our grain there. So, yeah, we wanna target SMEs. Of course, this is a project that is limited. It has a limited budget, and it has 4 years to do this. So what we're going to do is to focus in two clusters, the health clusters and the construction clusters, especially from Germany and England, because we cannot pilot everybody. So we're going to focus on there, and when the project finishes, we hope to have a lot of people, and we have to actually move this impact somewhere else. Actually, I want to take this opportunity to invite people from SMEs and from the academics to subscribe to our newsletter in learning-layers.eu/subscribe. Please do so, because we're gonna be sharing very valuable information with you bi-monthly on a newsletter that will be very light. We will not spam you, but we wanna start the conversation, and you know, we need you for that, and we need you to be able to share that valuable content with you.
Thank you, Pablo. Back to Graham.
Sounds the bazaar, and I said we had a brilliant program, and my gosh, we have, and we haven't finished yet. I know we were supposed to finish at 11:40, but it's just too much at this conference to fit into a 40-minute slot, and so we've taken an executive decision. We're going to overrun, and nobody's complaining yet at it, but they probably will. So it's Jen up next with Danny Glick, I think, and I'm not quite sure what this interview is going to be about, but I'm sure it's going to be absolutely fabulous.
Should I introduce
Jenny
myself?
Over to you.
Well, Danny's going to introduce himself. It's Danny Glick. I was talking to him last evening about assessment-driven learning. Is that right, Danny?
That is correct.
Can you explain that for people who didn't hear us talking last night?
Right. ETS is the world's largest assessment and testing organization. Edusoft is a fully owned company, or fully owned by ETS. We have over 22 years experience developing assessment-driven learning programs.
So what is assessment-driven learning?
An assessment-driven course is a course where the learning process reflects students' needs, right? Are based on their needs, are based on their learning styles, right? And unlike many other courses where which focus on outcomes or focus on results, we focus on the process, right? We want to identify students' weaknesses and strength, right? And to come up with a personalized plan of action and personalized learning path in order to help the students achieve their learning goals, right? To do that, we use automated tools which identify students' weaknesses, strength, and provide automated tips and pop-ups and ideas on how to improve and achieve their goals.
Is this all learners, or is it a particular sector? Are we talking sort of primary school, secondary school, higher education, industry?
We have many years experience developing language courses, computer-based language courses for the institutional market, for high school kids, higher education, working adults, for corporate learners, for individuals, but mainly students, language learners, students who wish to improve and develop their language skills, right? We follow a student-centered approach, right? The student-centered approach. We believe that in order to maximize learning outcomes, all right, the course should reflect students' needs, all right? And instead of like following or implementing, you know, a one-size-fits-all kind of approach, we believe in a personalized learning experience. You should know who the student are. You should establish the learning objectives. You should set the goals and then help students achieve their goals.
So could you give me a sort of anecdotal example, you know, a sort of an imaginary person? Say it's me. Mm-hmm. I've just joined one of your courses. So what happens to me?
All right. So once you sign up, you will take two pre-course assessments, a language proficiency assessment and a learning style evaluation, right? The learning style evaluation aimed at, you know, profiling or identifying, you know, your weaknesses, your strength, your learning styles, if you're a visual learner, social learner, if you're a personal learner, and right? And once we've identified your personality, learning styles, and long-term goals, we would create a study plan for the learner. We would assign the study plan, which outlines your weekly, monthly learning objectives and learning goals. Each time you log into the platform would track your progress, would make sure that you follow the plan, right? And once a dropout is identified or a potential dropout is identified, the system will generate alerts or some pop-ups or some tips in order to help the student overcome those challenges or obstacles and reach their target, reach their goal.
So is this primarily for independent learners? Independent online learners, or is it for blended learning, or is it something teachers can use in the classroom?
Both. As a matter of fact, we've got blended learners, right, using our program, and we've got some individuals, right, corporate learners, business people using our program to improve their English. So this solution is ideal for both blended learners and individuals. Right. Again, the program can be fully integrated with commercial textbooks, right, or with national curricula. So universities, ministers of education, teachers who have developed or have their own curriculum, their own textbooks, our program can be integrated with their own materials. So we're not we're not, you know, replacing textbooks. We're like, our program can be used as a tool to aid or to assist or to reinforce learning by providing additional practice based on students' learning needs and learning goals.
Okay, so I have one more question. As a teacher myself, does this make more work for the teacher or less work for the teacher? Do I end up with 20 students in my class who've all got different needs and I have to split myself 20 different ways? Does this make my job harder or easier?
Easier. Jenny, you know, teachers are extremely busy. Teachers are extremely busy, marking papers, assigning tests, checking tests, writing reports. Using our system, everything is done automatically, right? Tests are scored automatically. There is this brilliant automated writing tool or writing assessment tool called the E-Rater, right, which marks students' papers automatically. There is this test generator, which scores, right, which scores written assignments and computer-based tasks. This is done automatically for the teacher. Students' weaknesses and strengths are identified automatically by the system. So this tool reduces teachers' workload. So teachers, you know, will have more one-on-one time with their students.
So if teachers want to know more about it, how do they get hold of you? What's the contact details? And then I'm going to have to say goodbye. I'm sorry, we're running out of time.
EduSoftLearning.com. EduSoftLearning.com for more information about our system or about our platform, about those brilliant adaptive learning tools, they should check the EduSoftLearning.com website.
Danny, thank you very much indeed. Back to Graham. Where's
Been
Graham?
Listening to Graham. Sounds of the Bazaar live from Online Educa Berlin. It's Who's Conference. We've overrun our program, but there was nothing I could cut. And if you're a regular listener, I'd say this has been one of our best programs. A quick shout out before we go, because I promised to do a shout out. Hello to Anna in Valencia, who I know is listening. We hope you're having a great day, Anna. Okay, that's it for this morning's program. We've got two more programs in this series from Online Educa. This afternoon, we'll be broadcasting, I think, at 16:30, Question Time. For those of you who are not from the UK, anyone from the UK, I guess, knows the BBC Question Time programme. For those who are not from the UK, it's a panel programme. We'll be asking the audience, we'll be asking questions to our distinguished and diverse and very wonderful panel of four experts from different parts of the industry, journalists, training managers, etc. That's going to be a great fun programme, 40 minutes. And then tomorrow we'll be back at the same time, 11 o'clock to around 11:45, live again from the Marlene Bar here at the Intercontinental Hotel. And we've got another great programme lined up tomorrow. There's Orkin, Steve Warburton's coming on pro, Jay Cross is on the programme. Oh, we've got some Debbie Arnold. We've got some wonderful guests lined up for you tomorrow. That's it, I think. I said to say thank you to Online Educa Berlin for inviting us to do this radio program. And thank you to the people at the Intercontinental Hotel who have been kindly getting our equipment set up. Thank you to all our guests. And, of course, thank you to our great production team, Jenny Hughes, Eileen Lubke, Dirk Stieglitz, who have been working hard during all this programme. This is Graham Atwell signing out from the first of our three programmes. Do come back to the rest. You've been listening to Sounds of the Bazaar live internet radio.